Hey, what's up? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is July 13th, a Monday, and this episode is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, Meguiar Harley-Davidson. Yes, over a year they've been a sponsor. If you live up in the Bay Area, Northern California style, make sure you get your Harley-Davidson at Meguiar Harley-Davidson, located at 93 First Avenue North, Pacheco, California. Phone number is 925-945-6500. Give them a ring. Ask for Ryan. Tell them I sent you. You're a Dell Razor, a Green Dean. They're a fantastic dealer. Harley Davidson, Meguiar Harley Davidson. Not just any dealer. Family owned and operated. Awesome people. Great service department. Tons of motor clothes. They always have cool events, too. Go check them out. Meguiar Harley-Davidson. Hit them up online, meguiar-hd.com, or follow them on Twitter. Meguiar Harley-Davidson. Let's get into the episode. It's a little late today. I was at a busy weekend. I was in Portland all weekend with the mighty Marc Maron. I can't even fucking tell you. I've told you over and over and over. I don't want to just burn it out. But man, I love that guy. It's so funny to think like 3 years ago, I do his podcast and my whole fucking life changes. And now I'm out on the Maron Nation Tour, which is just insane, especially coming on fresh after the Marc Maron Obama interview. It's crazy. It's a totally different level. The audiences are fantastic. Look, if you're into Maron, you're into good movies, good food, good music, good comedy, books, everything, man. I mean, that's the type of people that Mark attracts to his listeners. So they're excellent audiences. You can go anywhere with material. You can make crazy, obscure references, and they're going to get it. And I'll tell you, this weekend was so epic. We did two shows, both theaters. One was at the Aladdin, which was like an old school theater. It was a at one point the place was the held a record for showing Deep Throat 14 years straight. Porn theater. Everybody has one of those, right? You're growing up, just some weird theater that showed porn. I always thought that was weird, right? You went to a theater and watched porn. It's so salty, man. Just like, yeah. It's fucking weird to me. But Aladdin, somebody restored it, fixed it all up. They do incredible concerts there now and comedy. Just super nice. The staff was great. That's another thing, man. I keep saying over and over, but the staff matters when you're out on the road. If they're cool, it's just so easy. Then the next night we did something that was just blew my mind. There's a place called Revolution Hall. And it was basically, in Portland also, we did two different venues. Held 850 people. It was a high school from 1910 to 1981. And as I looked at it, it was always it's a style of high school that I always wanted to go to. It was one of those ones, like, they usually have them where it snows. They're all indoor. It's like a brick building. You go up those classic stairway. They close the doors. You're in school, you know? And I don't know why I like that. But for some reason, my high school was so shitty. It was all outdoors, nothing covered. If it rained, you know, they had like dirt and stuff. Your shoes would get all muddy. And it just sucked. It had no vibe. Which is funny, because you think about it, if schools have vibe, you'd probably be into it more. Like, this place is cool. As cool as school could be. School sucks. For me, at least. I didn't like it, except for seeing my friends and hanging out and being crazy. other than that, man, early on with ADD, no one knows what that is. You're just in class going, get me out of here. I want to play rock. Fuck this, but this place, abandoned in 1981. School goes out of business, abandoned. Just gets taken over by homeless, whatever. Just sitting there, falling apart. And then I guess a couple years ago, somebody buys it, completely restores it. So it's a three-story school with the classrooms in a square all the way around. And in the middle of the school is this multi-use theater, maybe, probably was a gym at one time, everything. One of those rooms they used for everything. So the guy, or I don't know who did it, so whoever bought it, turned it into this beautiful theater, and now they're doing shows there. Which is so badass, man, because you got this old school vibe, you know, that you just couldn't build now. You just couldn't build a place like this. It would cost too much. And, you know, everything's so slick now. And you know, like if you go to the new venues, they sound great and the bathrooms are great and all that kind of stuff. But you miss that kind of old school, old world charm. I grew up in the old concert halls of San Francisco, Cow Palace, just fucking concrete box. You just put whatever in there, rodeos, rock and roll, boxing, Evel Knievel, whatever came to town. So anyway, this place, Revolution Hall, it could be one of the top five places I've ever been in as far as vibe. It was just fantastic. The neighborhood was cool, and all the audience was amazing. We met everybody after the show, and just the people were great. So if you're a new listener from the Portland shows, you guys fucking rule. That's all I can say. And Mark Maron is just an absolute god. I carry on for the Maron Nation tour. Our next stops will be in Denver, July 24th and 25th, Denver and Boulder. I will be with Mark Maron. Also, this week, Toronto. Do not miss out the Rock and Roll Circus. Me and Red Band are going to Toronto. The 18th, we'll be doing comedy and a live podcast at the cinema. Go to highontrees.com and get your tickets. Do not miss this, man. It's going to be so much fun. We got a lot of little special treats for you. Come out and see Red Band and I, Death Squad and the Del Razors. And then Red Band and I will also be in San Jose July 30th at the San Jose Improv. One show only. Do not miss it. Great to have all you guys on board. Thanks for the reviews. Keep those going on iTunes. And what else? I guess that's about it. I'm at 245 shows for the year. If you're counting or wanted to know, nobody wants to know. I'm just throwing that out, tooting my own horn. I'm fucking crazy today. I feel good. I love you guys. My guest today, a great friend of mine. I first met when I started comedy 5.5 years ago, and we became tight friends. We see each other every night around town. Very funny man, Jason Collins. He's similar to me. He started comedy at an older age. He did the Tonight Show last year. He's also gone to Just for Laughs, so he's doing some shit out there, some good stuff. He tours all around America. He also knows Kung Fu, which is a funny thing to me, right? Kung Fu! Kung Fu! Anyway, I love it. I love you guys. Light the candles of rock. Here he is, Jason Collins. All right, here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. Got an old friend stopping by, comedian Jason Collins. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. This place is awesome. I can't stop talking about your place.
It's pretty good. It's just put my phone on mute. It is good, man. It's been a fucking an up and down. You know, yeah. You got to move. Oh, you don't have to move. You got to move. Oh, your rent's raised. You know, it's that.
Well, yeah, life has to keep you on your toes.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think even if I was like made it on TV or something, this is all I want.
I mean, you don't have kids.
Nope.
That you know of.
No, I definitely don't. I go skins, dude.
There you go.
Since like, I forget what year it was, but when AIDS really hit in San Fran, I was like,
when AIDS was in.
Yeah, when AIDS was like fucking like on the front, man, you know, like just on the streets.
See, back when I was young, I was a dad. I was raising kids and all that.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 44.
And you had kids out. Your kids are
20 and 25.
Yeah, and they come to the shows. It's
yeah, they hang out at the
clubs. You're like competing for laughs with them.
Exactly. You know what I mean? You know what's funny is my kids now, especially my youngest, because he still lives out here, my 20-year-old, he can go into comedy club in Hollywood and they just walk him right in like he's a regular there. He doesn't even do stand-up.
Now, what about one of them? Did he join the Army? He was going to do that, I remember, a couple years ago we talked.
You know what? My youngest, from age like 2 to almost like 16, he was pretty sure he was going to join the Marines.
Right.
And then he just fell in love with surfing.
Oh, really?
And that's what he does now. He's got two jobs,
yeah,
and he does surf photography.
Surf photography.
He's in the water, in the big stuff.
I've seen
too.
Those guys. Yeah, they're badass. They're just floating out there, and then a full-blown wave comes, and they get those shots in the tube.
And they stay in it, it's terrifying. But, yeah, he's doing that, and he's big wave surfing, he's body surfing. He's down there in Orange County at the Wedge all the time, where if you know anything about that, they'll get these 20-foot waves in like 4 feet of water. It's insane.
Whoa.
And he's out there doing that stuff. So wow. he's that's his thing now. He does surf photography.
What got him into surfing?
I mean, living where we live. I mean, growing up in Long Beach, you know, we're a 5-minute drive from some pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, all of a sudden he's an adult. I'm going to surf.
He's always did it.
I got you.
He always did it from when he was younger, and he was started with bodyboarding, and then he started, you know, getting into the whole thing. And there was a documentary called
Matt Chasing Mavericks or whatever.
That's one of his favorites. But he did Come Hell or High Water.
Right, right.
The Torpedo Man those body surfers.
Yeah.
And he got so into this thing, and it literally like became his life. I mean, he was in the water in the morning, up in the morning, in the water, work, after work, back in the water. I mean, he's one of those kids that if he's going to do something, he's going to do it.
I always loved surfing when I was young. My mom would take me to Hawaii every Thanksgiving. We'd go that time because that's when the pipeline big wave competition was. And then, you know, I loved skateboarding. I was terrible. I was never good skateboarder. I loved skateboard parks. I was a BMX guy.
Yeah, me too. Know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was heavy into BMX, but like... Skiing, I was never good.
I was good. I could ski.
I was okay at snowboarding.
Yeah.
Because it was one board.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm standing on one board. As soon as you put a thing on each foot, they're going all over the place.
Ice skate, all that. But skateboarding, I don't know, man. It was just concrete. Where BMX, you're on dirt, you know,
yeah,
and you eat
safe.
Shit. You're like,
safe.
Oh, I ate shit. But, skate parks, early on, dudes were doing rad shit in those pools, you know?
That's when we're going through this drought thing right now.
Yeah, that's where
that's what
skate stuff
birthed
happened.
The whole pool surf.
That's
surfing
it, man.
Thing was that drought in what was it? The late 70s or something.
Yeah, everybody drained their pools, and then people started riding them.
I wanted to be a BMX guy so bad, but we couldn't afford the good bikes.
Yeah,
we always had the Huffies.
Yeah, oh, the fakes.
We had fake Huffies, and whenever you come off a jump on one of those things,
they crack the frame.
You crack your frame, and it's like, well, you know. And in my family, it wasn't like, well, let's go get another Huffy. We were that poor. We're like, well, then you just don't have a bike anymore.
Yeah, well, you know? I got lucky, man. I got a team sponsor.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then I just had badass bikes.
Who was your
Panda?
Oh man,
remember Panda?
My favorite bike, my dream bike back then, if you remember Kuwaharas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was like my dream bike. Yeah. I wanted one of those so bad. And I went to school with a guy who was sponsored by them, and I just thought he was the coolest. I mean, this was 30-plus years ago. I still know that. That guy's name was Artie Gum.
Yeah.
And he was sponsored by Kuwahara, and he always had the cool – I mean, he came to school on a different bike every day.
It wasn't like that. Like, I was like – Panda had teams that were like satellite teams.
Oh, man.
So – our bike shop, you know, they go, here's your Oh, someone at the door. Hold on. Let's see what that's about. Back at it, man. With the FedEx guy stopped in right mid set. Dropped some records.
Dean got
off.
Presents right in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Like
that's awesome.
I don't even call him fans. I just call him a friend of the podcast. Sent some records.
That's dope.
And he FedExed him.
So that was that. It wasn't
that cost
wasn't
some
cheap.
Money. Thank you, man. Thank
See,
you.
That's what I'm talking about. See, that's how I'm always thinking like that. Oh, that wasn't cheap because of the way I was brought up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we were talking about the BMX thing.
Yeah.
One Christmas.
Yep.
My dad took my brother and I because you know my twin brother David.
Yeah. You got a twin brother. Yeah. Yeah. Let's lock that in. Yeah. You guys are identical.
Yep. Identical twin brothers. Yeah. Dad took our old bikes.
Uh-huh.
And fixed them up.
Fixed them up
and paint and repainted them and everything.
Yeah,
for Christmas.
Oh, that's rough.
You know, and that you know that's how you know my dad was in the music business.
Oh yeah,
yeah. My dad had a hit single in the 70s.
Whoa,
and
what
toured all over the country with it. My dad played bass guitar, and he sang and he wrote.
Wow,
he was a musician.
And that's why you guys were poor.
Exactly. You
know, exactly.
He had a hit single and we
were poor. No money coming for the record company.
Oh, well,
my mom, a single family, poor, you know, government cheese, food stamps, and all that stuff. It just seemed like that was just normal. My whole neighborhood was like that.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
There was no clowning because we were all on food stamps.
I got a little bit clowned because my parents, what they did is they took everything that they made and moved us into a decent neighborhood.
Oh, there you go.
In other words, we didn't stay in we were in a bad neighborhood for a while, but my parents were like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And so every penny that they made went into the house, so there wasn't any extra.
Yeah, and now is it only you and your brother?
Just the two of us, yeah.
And that was natural twins? No, like, in vitro or anything?
No, my parents didn't even know they were having twins until, like, the day or two before we were even born.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do sonogram or anything?
It's not the same.
Yeah,
They one heartbeat. They went and had a baby shower for one baby.
Yeah.
They had a name picked out, my brother's name.
Yeah.
I was the surprise.
Wow.
I mean, my brother's name is a family name. David and his middle name is Michael. David and Michael are all over the family.
Yeah.
Jason Christopher, which is my name. I'm the first. So they had to go and hit all the secondhand stores and stuff and get another crib. And my parents showed me, they have like photo albums from the baby shower. They have one that's congratulations on, and then they have a whole second photo album that's like, oh, there's two, you know. My dad.
If your mom would have known, she would have smoked two cigarettes.
Exactly, exactly.
That's 70s, right?
70. You know what I mean? Dude, I don't even remember. We didn't even have a car seat.
No.
That's the 70s.
No. Car seats.
We had my parents had a VW Bug.
Yeah. So did my mom. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, they took the back seat out and put down plywood in the shape of the car and padded it and just threw us in like a playpen in the car. Yeah. So long drives, they just threw us back there in the thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, man.
Tumble around in there.
Those
for a while.
VWs all smell the same inside.
Yeah. Oh,
I found out why. I asked a guy and he said that every early Bug and the buses and all, they all use the same stuffing for the interior.
That's what I figured. It was like something with the rubber or the stuff inside the
seat. It's the stuffing inside the seat, and I guess it's like a kind of a hay mixture or whatever, and that's why they all smell the same. All of them.
We're hoping that it's a healthy thing.
Yeah. we're dead.
What fumes are we breathing in?
Yeah, we're dead. I mean, we're huffing. Like, you lived in Long Beach. You're just huffing,
man.
All kinds of like paint.
Oh, man.
And everything. That's an industrial area down there.
It amazes me that we lived.
Oh.
Because I'm a parent and you know, I have the two boys and everything. You were so protective of them.
Yeah.
And then but I wasn't as protective as I see they are now.
Right.
Like, I got a buddy who, one of my best friends, his son and my son are a day apart.
Right.
Like, a year and a day apart. His son's 21, mine son's 20, but their birthdays are the day. So he's got a 21-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Oh, that's like space. A total dick to the 3-year-old, just
completely
the smother.
Completely different. Well, no, he was so overprotective with the first kid.
Oh, wow.
Because he never had kids before.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't even breathe on this kid.
Yeah.
His 3-year-old now, I talk about it on stage. I go, I go over to this guy's house and his son is on top of the refrigerator.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like,
that's how we were raised.
Your kid's on the fridge. He goes, yeah, he knows how to get down. You know, it was. It's just completely different. But, yeah, they're so protective and, like,
I mean, when we were growing up, it was like,
get out of the house in the morning and don't come back.
Not only that, but you got out of school. My mom wasn't there until around 7 or 8 at night.
Latchkey
just came
kid.
Home, do whatever. Yep, latchkey. I never heard that one until I saw a comedian talk about latchkey. I don't know if it was Burr or someone, but they used that term. And I was like, what's latchkey? You know? And then
we had my mom made us little necklaces with the freaking house key around the necklace.
Yeah. I remember one time walking home from school. You ever shit your pants on the way home from school?
The worst.
All this happened to me in high school. I'm not talking kid. You know what I mean?
I thought you meant like third grade or something, man.
I'm talking about, you know, you're a far walk home, and all of a sudden you go, oh, no, your mind knows you're there.
You're like, can I fart?
Yeah, there used to be a fence. I would have to hop over. I wouldn't have to, like, it was a quick route to my house.
Right.
And I would hop this big fence. I hopped over it, and I go, oh, I'm going to make it. And then I walked up to the door, and I didn't have my key. I was locked out.
And you went in your pants? Why didn't you just go around to the backyard?
No, it just came out. It was like, oh, I got it. It wasn't like I just sat there and went, I'm shitting my pants.
That would have been
no, that would have been even more. Ah, that's so Charlie Brown, right? Just chilling like, I'm out. But it was one of those ones, like if I had the key, I would put it in and I could run and make it. But that's another thing
that you were saying, like the shortcut home.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not even a thing anymore. I feel like these kids all have rides.
Yeah.
And they're all being shipped to schools way far away from the house because of this. Nobody goes to school by their house anymore.
Nope. They don't, because that's the bad school district.
It's insane.
We send them out to Calabasas where the good school is. But it's like, you know what, man? I think no matter what school you're going to, you're going to get out of it what you want to get out of it. You can go to the worst school, but if you're nerdy and into it, you're going to...
And you stand out more in those kind of schools.
Yeah, you do.
Like, do you want to go to a school full of rock stars, or do you want to be the one rock star at your school?
Absolutely, right? So you grew up out in Long Beach. What band did he play in?
The band was called Feather.
Feather.
And the single was Friends.
How's it go? Can you give it to me?
Oh, man. We are friends digging each other. It was very 70s.
Yeah.
But they took, you know, I remember
it's going, like that sky rockets in flight.
A little more, not as bubblegummy as that.
Yeah, right.
It wouldn't give you a cavity. But they were, like, for example, I found some old tour posters at my mom's garage.
Yeah.
And the people that were on the bill with him. I mean, he's on the bill with Janis Joplin.
Wow.
Chris Christopherson.
Right.
One said Elton John. I'm like, geez.
And where was this all going down?
When I was born in Santa Monica, and we lived in an area of Malibu called Malibu Lake.
Yeah.
It's out there near Agora.
I know where that is.
A little hidden area.
Yeah, I've seen that, actually.
We're out there.
On the way to the rock store. It's down there on the left.
Exactly, yeah. And we... You know, that's where we lived, and Dad wasn't ever home. He was always on tour, so we were there. And Mom didn't like it; it was a little far away. So we moved to North Hollywood.
Right.
From there, we lived in a pretty rough area in North Hollywood. And then at about
all of North Hollywood is rotten.
But back there, it was But I just recently went by because I was doing a gig at the Ha Ha, and it's kind of around the corner from where I used to live. And I went to look at my old place. Oh man, unrecognizable.
Wow.
My mom didn't like the area. They researched school districts.
Yeah.
And they found that the Long Beach School District was a good district, and then they moved down there. But Dad did music, until I was about 8 years old.
Wow.
I mean, he was a musician. You know, he grew up a musician. He was touring and cutting records from age 17.
Right. Now, did he sing, or he just played bass in a band?
He sang. He did a lot of singing and a lot of writing as well. Remember here in L.A., the radio station KDAY?
Oh, yeah.
K-Day. My dad wrote the original jingle for that radio station. And like,
is he still alive?
No, my dad passed away about a month after I started doing stand-up.
Whoa, really? From what?
He had he was diagnosed with colon cancer.
Oh, brutal. How old?
He was only 60 when he passed. He got diagnosed at like 55 or 54 or something.
Wow.
55, I think. And he went in and had the colon cancer removed, but when they did the surgery... When they cut him open, they found that it spread to his liver. So he had to do treatment, and he went through. He actually went into remission. This is the bullshit thing about our medical system, by the way. They put him on this blind study where half the guys get the thing and half guys get like a whatever. And he was one of the guys that actually got the real drug that they were testing.
Right.
And it worked. He went into remission for like a full year.
Wow.
And the doctor said this kind of cancer sometimes comes back, and if it comes back, comes back pretty aggressive. It came back. So we said, well, let's just put him on that shit that worked.
Yeah.
Guess what? Of course. Oh, it didn't get approved.
Oh.
So he was gone 4 months later.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Wow, and that's like my cousin, man. You know, yeah. He had AIDS. He was living for 20 years with AIDS, and he was general manager of a hotel in New York, and then he got laid off. He couldn't afford the Cobra, and he died in like 4 months because the pills are like 10 grand a month or something.
When we went through all that with my dad, I told my family, I said, look, if I ever get diagnosed, I'm moving. I'm going to Canada. I'm going to France. I'm going somewhere where they'll just treat me.
Yeah, like Germany,
man. Go all this through this bullshit, you know.
Yeah, cancer's brutal, right? Like, how old are you?
I'm 44.
You're 44 and I'm 49. And it's scary now. Like, when we were growing up, people just lived to be 100. Everyone. Like, they smoked and they drank. And maybe 80 if they were like really
shitty. It's the shit that's in the food that we eat.
Totally. Totally.
Like, I was in Connecticut a couple weeks ago, and I was taking an Uber from the Foxwoods there to the airport.
Yep.
And, you know, that's kind of a good drive. So I got to know hanging out with the Uber driver, and he starts talking about being a cancer survivor.
Right.
He goes, yeah, he was fourth stage prostate cancer.
Whoa.
Fourth stage. And he beat it.
Wow.
He just has to go in once a month for a shot. I'm like, man, that's insane. He goes, yeah, and I couldn't believe it happened to me. I don't drink. I don't smoke. He goes, but I did drink a lot of Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was a Diet Coke fiend. It's like,
Shit. You ever hear about my story? Is I drank Diet Coke like 5, 6, 7, 10 a day.
Oof.
Just hooked on them. I can't believe 60 Minutes has never done a story on Diet Coke because you drink two or three. What happened was I drank.
You know why they haven't done a story on it or anybody? Because of the goddamn
advertising.
Money.
I know. It's bullshit. Money. But I drank booze, and then when we don't drink booze anymore, you get like what they call a beer claw. You need something at a club in your hand, and I started drinking Diet Coke.
That's what I would do at the clubs.
And then I got fucking hooked on Diet Coke. I was so bad that, like, when I'd be coming home at night, I go, oh, shit, I don't got Diet Coke. I turn around and hit a store.
Man.
And then one night I was DJing in a club, and a lady came over, and she said, I seen you drink, like, 5 Diet Cokes while I've been here. And I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, man, go home and Google Diet Coke addiction and all this stuff. And I Googled it. She goes, I worked in the factories. We wore hazmat suits when we made it.
That's insane. You drink it is because you don't want to gain the weight because it got 0 calories. You're
That's
like, oh,
right.
This is better for me.
Yeah.
It's worse.
It's worse because aspartame and all that shit.
It's insane.
Excuse me. And they even proven that stuff tricks your brain now and thinks it's sugar. So it releases the same shit, you know?
Dude, that whole sugar thing is insane. You watch that documentary?
I can't get off it,
You watch that documentary, Fed Up?
Yeah, man. I can't get off sugar.
I have to. That documentary...
I'm trying to get off.
I quit caffeine a month ago. It's an addiction. America is addicted to food.
Oh, yeah, we are.
We are a bunch of food addicts.
We're addicted to everything. We're addicted to texting. We're addicted to fucking drugs. We're addicted to sex, porn,
and I get
food.
Fucking pissed about all of it. Like, I get so mad about texting. Sometimes I'm like, why am I looking at my phone so much?
I know.
Or if I see somebody else looking at their phone, or if you're on stage and you see somebody looking at their phone, you're like, can we just fucking put these things down for 5 minutes?
We yell at the person in the crowd, but we would be doing
as soon as we get off
stage.
I got to check those posts or whatever they are.
You know, they've proven that texting hits the same exact spot as drugs, like the dopamines. So people get addicted to texting, and if they don't get texts throughout the day, they'll just shoot out some like, yo, what's up to somebody, just so they can engage. That's why these apps blow up, like Twitter and everything.
I have to talk myself into it every day, putting my phone in. Not just down,
because
if I just put it down and I could see it, I'm going to go get it.
It's over.
I have to put it in a drawer and close the drawer and walk out of the room.
Ari Shaffir was so hooked that he got rid of his phone and he only has a flip phone now.
That's smart.
Because he would be 2 hours in bed before he even got out of bed just fucking looking at his phone.
I hate that, like, I'm still at that stage. I feel I'm still at that stage in my comedy career where I have to Instagram and I have
to
tweet.
That's exactly what I was saying yesterday. You know, because I would love to be Louis C.K.
Get past that shit.
Yeah.
If you're a Louis.
Have some mystique.
Just, you don't have to post anything.
Yeah. And his vines are called the Louis C.K. Show.
Exactly.
A fucking TV show. He's not out doing a fucking vine.
Yeah.
He's putting all that time into a real piece of art.
I mean, it's sold to us as just all this free advertising. It's free promotion and free of this, and it ain't, man. It's like, it costs might not cost money, but man,
yeah,
looking at that screen all day, it's fucking my eyes
up. Oh, my eyes are torched.
You know, I can't.
And then, like, your jokes will go away too, because you're not living life.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not engaged out there.
Exactly.
You know?
And you know, and I hear people telling jokes about the emojis and the Instagrams.
Yeah.
And
I don't fuck around with that.
I don't care, man.
You know?
But yeah, it's a trip, dude. I mean, yeah, but yeah, that cancer shit is.
So you're in Long Beach, and what were you doing? Some DJing? Were you rapping? What was going on out there?
When I was like 18, 19, I got into producing. I was producing hip hop music in the neighborhood.
Snoop Dogg, all that shit's going on.
All that's like right before Snoop hit there in like, what was it, 90 or something?
90,
like that.
Yeah, 91. Yeah.
I started getting into the production thing, and I was producing what I loved, which was hip hop music at the time. I was real deep into heavy into hip hop music, and I thought I want to learn how to make that.
Yeah,
I actually went to Long Beach City College, took some courses in MIDI sequencing and music production. And
was your brother like, I want to do that too?
We were doing it together. We've pretty much done everything together. Yeah, martial arts, everything.
That's hilarious, right? Twins.
Exactly. We always had the same.
We're doing hip hop this year. What? Okay.
And then it was, we're doing stand up. Yeah. I remember the first time I did stand up, I think I said weed, and my brother go, hey, we got to write some jokes because we're doing stand up.
And he said no?
He said, I'll like the jokes, but I'm not going on stage. That's the one difference.
That was the first time he didn't do it.
That's now, the one difference between us.
Which one's the shy one? Your brother, of course, right?
Yeah, he's not a stage guy. He's more of a behind the scenes guy. Because
I dated a twin for 7 years. There's always the noisy one, and there's always the chill one.
Right, he's the chill one. But he works really well with groups of people because he teaches martial arts every day.
Yeah,
and all that. But we were producing. I got into producing hip hop music, and then a buddy of mine hooked me up with a guy who was at the time at Polygram Island Records, and he had a little subsidiary label off there called True Sound Records, and they signed me as a producer, and I started producing hip hop for different artists and stuff. But at the time, it wasn't cool to have a white guy producing your hip hop at that time.
Like there's no threat on that.
Now it's just whatever. But back then it wasn't. So they would take a song that I made for this artist and they would give it to another producer, and he'd kind of like, almost like what we call punching up a joke.
Yeah.
He'd punch up my track a little bit just to say that that guy's name was on it as well. So I was like, okay. They kept me.
Yeah.
Really,
now, are they paying you for shit?
Yeah,
like
I mean, I got equipment. I had studio time. And then I had a really cool opportunity. I produced, if you remember, there was a movie on HBO, and it was a made for HBO movie called Strapped.
Right.
Forrest Whitaker produced and directed it. It was about all that hip hop culture, gang violence.
Right, like Boys in the Hood.
I produced the music for that.
Oh, wow.
That movie. I mean, my name's in the credits and everything. And, you know, long story short, I signed a bad contract. I didn't get paid. I got some equipment out of the deal, and
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And your dad, but
trust me,
man,
when I said I was going to do that, my mom went, "Oh shit!"
I had no money, right?
Nope. Yeah, and of course, my dad, being an artist, he's like, "Yo, follow your dream," you know?
Yeah.
And that we did that from about age 19, 20 to 21. About 4 years, I was messing around with that, and then I had I had kids young.
Yeah.
And I had to put food on the table.
Where do you meet your lady at? Long Beach?
Down in Long Beach. You know the Gas Lamp?
Yep.
Years ago, that was a club called Bentley's.
Right.
And they had an under 21 night for the young guys. And I went there one night, and that's where I met her. We met there.
you just out of the gate, I'm getting married?
Well, no. Out of the gate, I went, oops, we have kids.
Oh,
that's
I got
it. We actually.
See, you should have been wearing skins.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, no,
I should have listened to my
kids,
I should have listened to my dad. Telling you what, I'm glad. I love my kids, and I love my wife more than anything in the world, but if I was able to go back and do it again, I'd probably take my time.
Yeah.
You know, not do. I mean, like, dude, when you see all these kids out here running around doing stand-up that are 25, 24, and they just got all the freedom. When I was 24 years old, I was running a business and raising a family as if I was in my 40s.
What was the business you were working at?
So when I was 21, rewind a little bit. My dad was doing music, and then he stopped doing that because he needed to put food on the table. And a guy that he was involved in the music industry with started an electronics component company out in Orange County.
Yeah.
And brought my dad in, and they started this little tiny business where they were selling like inductors and capacitors, and built it over years into a Fortune 500 Inc.
Wow.
Company out there in Anaheim, California. And when
they're selling computer parts and shit?
Selling little parts that go into computers, circuit boards, pacemakers, all kinds of stuff.
Don't they do that shit in China?
Well, yeah, now they do. That's why that business doesn't exist anymore.
Right, yeah.
But he was working at that thing, and I was working in his warehouse because I needed to, you know, the music thing wasn't working out. I had kids.
Yeah.
And one day he called me in, and my dad was the vice president of the company. He wasn't the boss. He was the vice president, but he wasn't the boss. Guy calls my dad in and says, we got to fire some people today, and they wanted him to fire me.
Wow.
His own son. So now, mind you, at the time, meanwhile, I was studying martial arts. My brother was already teaching part-time. My dad was a black belt. So we kind of had that in our family.
Right.
And he says, my dad calls me in his office and says, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Let's open a martial arts school.
Wow.
1 month to the day after that conversation, we opened a school.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about martial arts. Mm-hmm. I always clown on it. I mean, not like UFC and stuff where we actually see the karate
the fighting
and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm 49. Mm-hmm. Never have I seen a guy use martial arts in a bar fight or anything.
You may have and just didn't know it.
But I mean, like,
you're talking like the full-on stance and jump. No. Those are illegal.
Yeah, some roundhouse
kicks. I actually bounced for a while at a bar.
Yeah.
In Orange. Actually, cool story. Our buddy's show, Undateable.
Yeah.
Whenever they show the exterior scene of the bar, that's an actual bar down in Orange County called O'Malley's.
Oh, wow.
And I worked at that bar as a bouncer.
Wow, that is so weird. Isn't that weird? Is, right?
Yeah, I worked at that bar for years as a bouncer. But you learn to use just timing and spacing and stuff like that just to survive.
Yeah.
Anybody that's going to jump down into some crazy martial arts stance in the middle of a bar is looking to get their ass kicked, in my opinion, or shot.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to make it like you don't know what you're doing. It's almost like a hidden thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's ninja stuff.
And that's usually how I did it. I wore ninja costumes.
But did you have any of those smoke bombs? Just
smoke bombed.
You threw it down and then you were over playing Pac-Man.
The worst thing that ever happened, I was walking home with my buddy and I, my brother, my buddy who I did martial arts with, and he was really good, and he's still amazing martial arts to this day.
Yeah.
The three of us were walking home with a girl that was a friend of ours, and we're in junior high school, just kids, and we're walking in, and you know, this is Long Beach, and this gangster comes walking down the street towards us and starts harassing the girl that we're with. He's like, yo, girl, what's up? Let me get, you know. She goes, you better watch out. My friends are black belts.
Oh.
And that's just, you just are asking for us to get in a fight with this guy.
Yeah.
And of course, he's like, oh, yeah, what the hell are you going to do about this? And he's probably got a gun on him.
Yeah.
So my thing is, I try not to, like, people are always like, hey, why don't you ever talk about it in your stand-up
act? Of course.
I don't really.
You don't want to do that because someone would be like, oh, hey, why don't you come off here?
And I just don't find, the connection in it as far as, like, the humor for me, because it was like, I opened this business with my dad, and, like, because we opened a martial arts school, and I ran a martial arts school for 20 years.
Wow. Now, let me ask about martial arts. Is it basically just keep giving the guys belts so they keep paying?
If you want to make some money, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You got to give.
Now, what's the first belt? White?
When you show up, you're a white belt. Okay. It varies with different arts.
Like, I got you.
Like, for example, I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a while. There's, at the adult level, at the kid level, there's a lot more belts. There's like a yellow and an orange, I think. But at the adult level, it just goes white, blue, purple, brown, black. That's it.
Okay. So basically, you want to get these kids belts so they keep coming, right?
But you want to teach, like, a good school, which is the way we did it, is we didn't give them away. I mean, there are some special cases where you're like, if the guy is just putting in his time, you know, they have a disability maybe or a learning disability. And there's always those cases. But for the most part, you want them to earn it. But there's no way in the world that I could have taught the way my instructor taught me.
Right.
Because I would have been sued and run out of town.
Because they're just kicking you and stuff.
Back in the early 80s, it was a completely different thing. There was like blood on the walls and they're kicking the shit out of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're learning.
You're learning how to get. Yeah. And the best way to learn how to fight is taking a good ass kicking. It really, in my opinion, really is. But, you know, a hard punch in the face is an amazing lesson, because that's a big fear.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest fear I ever had was going into a fight.
Once you get hit a couple of times, you go, I know what that's like.
Yeah.
It's like bombing on stage.
But like we were saying earlier, with the way people are parenting now, I couldn't teach that way.
You could get sued.
Yeah. So it was almost, it was like martial arts light almost when it came to the kids. There were a lot of adults and a great adult program there. These guys were hardcore and they wanted to learn the real way. And I loved that. It was fun.
Yep.
But when it came to a lot of the kids, you really had to just
Soft touch it.
Soft
touch it. It's like a fourth place trophy in Little League now. You're like, what? Yes. Fourth place?
And it was like,
you're a loser. That's how you harden
up. And my brother and I, we really tried so hard to keep it traditional. Like, if you're not ready for the belt, you're not getting the belt.
Yeah.
And we would hold testing every. In other words, just, instead of just giving it to them,
we
would hold a test every month, and you had to qualify to get on this test. And of course, there's that one parent that my son's been trying for 3-4 months. Can I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I got to pay the bills and whatever, you know, because you get a lot of people that just throw money at it.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah, man. I mean, that's why I always loved the Comedy Store. You couldn't throw money at it to get past.
Exactly.
A manager couldn't get you past. An agent couldn't get you past.
You had to get you past.
You had to get you past, man. You get a black belt, you know?
Dude, so many people ask me, how do you get in here and how do you get in there? And I'm like, literally like, I don't know how you're going to do it. I know how I did it, but I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
It's got to be your own thing, you know?
It's got to be your own journey, man.
There's really no formula that I could remember.
There's no map.
Yeah.
There's no map. Everybody's different.
How do you get to this? And how did you get on the Tonight Show? Or how did you get a manager? Or how did you get in the comedy? I just did it by just doing it.
You're not figuring that out. You're figuring out how to get funny.
I remember how I learned that lesson. When I was a new comic, I asked a comedian. He had just done Live at Gotham, I think, when it was still on Comedy Central. How'd you get on there, man? And he looked at me kind of insulted, and he said, because I'm funny.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay. And it made me think back to my martial arts days of like, how do you get
a black belt?
You fucking earn that shit, you know?
Yeah. So you're doing Kung Fu school. Oh, real quick, isn't it funny how everyone, when you look at the ads, the instructor taught Bruce Lee.
Oh,
you
know what I mean? All such bullshit.
It's the same thing as the 80s when they're singing coaches. Singing coach, Vicky such and such. She's worked with Prince, Axl Rose, Madonna, whoever's big at the time, you know?
You know, these guys who would throw these names around, it was so fun. Like, how did you do anything with Bruce Lee?
Yeah.
When he died in the 70s and you're only 30.
Yeah, right.
What? Yeah.
You might have watched a Bruce Lee video. Yeah. That's about it. Lee is the all-time god of martial arts. He's the king, right?
Yeah, he was one of the guys that I wanted to be like when I was a kid, and I thought that's what I want to do. And then as I was studying martial arts, I found out about actual martial artists that weren't TV stars that became like, whoa, that guy's my idol. One of them was Hoist Gracie.
Oh yeah, love him. Early UFC.
But then he became a TV star.
Right.
After I was already studying with him and everything, and I had to leave his school because it got so overcrowded.
Was the school around here?
Torrance, California.
And he was just teaching grappling, right?
Yeah,
was that his thing?
It was just him teaching. It was him, his brother, and his dad, and it was awesome.
I remember early UFC. I bought the black box cable.
Oh yeah. That's the
real shit.
I almost went to the second one. I almost was part of his crew at the second one because I helped. Did some training sessions with him because he was fighting other different styles, and he knew that I was a black belt in another style, and he wanted me to throw punches at him. And he, you know, but that guy was amazing. And then
you got Ken Shamrock.
Ken Shamrock.
You got Royce. You have the whole Gracie family, basically. Mm-hmm. That
Hicks and Gracie, and then their cousins, the Machado brothers, who my brother still studies with today.
And then you get into the Tank.
Rogan studied with the
Tank.
Machado. Oh, Tank. Oh man, I got a crazy
Tank Abbott.
I got a crazy Tank Abbott story.
What do you got?
Okay, so a friend of mine worked at this very upscale restaurant in downtown Long Beach.
Yeah.
And calls me and said, you got to come down here. Are you in the area? And I was like, yeah. Come here. You're not going to believe this. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And I get there, and all of a sudden there's all kinds of police. There's commotion. Tank Abbott has the manager of the restaurant by the throat pinned against the wall, and he's trying to beat a guy up, and like five different people are holding him. And I'm like, what the heck happened? Yeah. You remember how he used to dress with just the cutoff shorts and the wife beater?
Yeah.
He wanted to get into the restaurant dressed like that. And they had a strict dress code at this restaurant. You had to have a coat and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
kind of like
the
Magic Castle here. You can't get in without a coat.
Yeah, he's trying to roll in.
He wants to
fucking
just,
Tank
and they,
Abbott.
They're like, no, sir, you can't come in. There's a dress code. And he like lost his shit and was going to beat the crap out of the manager. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, man. That shit was great, right? That early UFC?
That was like almost like a movie.
Yeah, no rules.
No weight
for
classes.
You couldn't bite. You couldn't kick in the nuts. But
no eye
weight.
Gouging. It was eye gouging, groin shots. I think that was
and biting. That was it.
Other than that, they'd put a 150-pound guy up against a 300-pound. It was no weight class.
Oh.
And literally all different styles. Because right now, it's evolved so much that everyone is just now fighting the same.
Yeah, they're
which takes an amazing amount of skill.
Yeah,
don't get me
you
got
to learn like everything there is. But back then, it was a grappler against a boxer,
yeah,
or a boxer against a karate dude,
or a judo guy against remember the sumo wrestler.
That shit was
badass. And the kickboxer.
Right?
Do you remember when the kickboxer kicked the judo guy?
Yeah, right in the fucking
you see his
face.
Tooth. You see his tooth fly into the front row. That was like that was like real blood sport.
That shit was real, man. And there was blood all over the ring and.
Royce would put his skinny ass in there and just choke everybody out.
Yeah, and then Shamrock and him would go at it every couple months. It was like, you know, try to
But then everybody got hip to grappling.
Yeah.
And now there's no kung fu against it. It's just it's MMA, MMA against MMA. And a lot of these guys, I'm liking that you're seeing the trend go back to a lot of guys staying on their feet and kicking and punching.
We need that.
Because it's so exciting to watch that.
Yeah, because the grappling to me is like 70s football when they didn't have the West Coast offense.
Right, right.
It was just run down, run down.
Right.
And once in a while, a hole, he ran it through.
Right.
Football would be so fucking boring.
And the thing is, as a spectator watching those two guys grapple, if you don't know a lot about the art, it's boring.
It is boring.
When you know what's going on in that little clinch though, and you know it's like a little chess match.
Yeah.
It's cool
like
to
when
watch.
When he's right up on him, going, "Your mama smells fucking like diapers."
Exactly.
He's doing those mama jokes.
He's doing mama jokes in his ear, and you don't know how effective that is, man. That's a very effective technique.
Remember growing up, man? It was your mama, and you'd be fighting.
Oh yeah,
that was so weird. How brutal that was, right?
I had the quickest temper when it came to somebody saying anything about my mom.
It's crazy because I like the capping part about it. Like I see, you know, they have the roast battle and stuff. But when I grew up, you know, like the guys just on the corner would cap on each other. Your mama's so cheap. She shop at Kmart. Like Kmart was the lowest blow.
Oh man,
your mama.
We called it bagging.
Your mama, bagging was later, but it was capping in the '70s. Then it was like, quit bagging on me, dude.
Yeah.
You know, but it would be like. You know, your mama's pussy's so beat up that, you know, whatever. It's just all that. It was crazy, right?
We would bag on each other, and as soon as somebody brought the mom into it, it was like, whoa, whoa, all right. Okay, well.
Yeah.
And I used to get in these fights, and I used to get kicked out of school all the time for fighting. And then finally my mom says, what are you doing? I go, system of my mom. Like, she goes, those kids don't even know me.
Yeah.
They know nothing about me.
Yeah.
Man, I used to get kicked out of school so much for fighting.
Where'd you go to school? Long Beach?
Long Beach. First year of kindergarten in North Hollywood.
Right, yeah.
And then halfway through the year, we ended up down in Long Beach. And then from then on, I grew up down there.
You're doing the kung fu. How do we get into comedy?
Well, growing up, always loved it.
Yeah.
It's one of those typical stories my parents...
Well, one of the best specials ever shot in Long Beach, which it is the best special to me of all time.
Yeah.
That's right. It's incredible. And
I think it was at the Terrace Theater. When he talked about Long Beach and the act.
Yeah. It's so great. He's wearing the red suit, the hunting thing.
Yeah.
You got the gun? I thought you had the gun.
My parents had Pryor records and Cosby records and Red Fox records and Carlin records. At the house,
Cheech and Chong,
David and I would listen to him.
Yeah,
and so I always loved it, and we would mimic it. We would I would do Richard Pryor's act to my friends.
Of course, yeah, me too. Like a camp,
Carlin's act to my friends.
Saturday Night Live.
I remember I got an audition for something once when I was like 15. Yeah, I was like 15 years old, 14 or 15 years old, and my parents were still friends with industry people, and they were, you know, twins right now. You can get a lot of stuff, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I had my brother and I go audition for this agent, and he asked us to do a monologue. You know, sometimes I just recited something off of like an Eddie Murphy special. You know? Yeah, with the N-word and everything.
Wow. That's great, right?
So I always loved doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I always had that performance bug from doing the music thing because I fancied myself. I thought I could sing when I was younger, and I wanted to be an R&B singer and all that stuff. But I just had that I feel like that calling to the stage kind of a thing.
Yep.
Then the kids came along, and you know, reality came along, but it was always there, you know. And then I met Joe Coy.
Where'd you meet him at?
Joe Coy and my best friend that I grew up with, and Joe Coy, were really good friends.
Right.
And I met him through him, and my buddy ran a couple of clothing lines and stuff that sponsored Joe.
Right.
Like Joe came up to my buddy at a clothing convention in Vegas and said, "I love your line. I actually wear it when I do stand up. I'm a stand up comic." He was just brand new, still doing coffee houses and stuff like that. And they got along really well. So my buddy was like, yo, we'll sponsor you. They actually sponsored his first two DVDs that he did, and wow. They just were friends for years. And him and I never really met or crossed paths, but my buddy was always like, my buddy knew I wanted to do stand-up. He's like, you got to meet Joe. And so one day my buddy's having a barbecue, and I'm in the food line, and I'm BSing with this guy standing next to me, and we're cracking each other up. And then we sit down to eat together, and I go, what's your name? He goes, I'm Joe.
Yeah.
And I didn't click yet. And he goes, man, you're funny, dude. He's telling me how funny I am.
Yeah.
He goes, what do you do for a living? And I said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. He goes, what do you do? I go, I'm a martial arts instructor. I teach martial arts. Joe's had a love for martial arts. He's like, oh, that's cool. I go, what do you do? He goes, I'm a comedian. I'm like, oh, shit, you're the comic.
Yeah.
And then we kind of became friends and exchanged information and numbers. And I ended up just hanging out with him and going to his shows all the time for like a year before.
So where Ice House, Laugh Factory.
When he was still doing the Laugh Factory, like on Monday nights and Wednesday nights.
Right.
Sometimes he was getting the weekend spots in the Ice House, and I would go see him at the Improv. And
what year are we talking?
We're talking 2005. 2005.
So he's not monstrous yet.
He's just about to break.
Yeah. And you're like hanging in his crew, just going to watch comedy.
Yeah, just hanging out with him and going. And then one day, you know, and mind you, I told you Dad got diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And Joe calls me and says, yo, I'm headlining in the Irvine Improv. You want to come? I'm like, yeah, because my Long Beach is between here and there, between LA and Irvine. I said, yeah, go pick me up at my parents' house. And I go, my dad wants to meet you. Because my dad, being an entertainer, always liked meeting other entertainers.
Yeah.
Picking their brain and talking and shop with them and stuff. So Joe comes to the house, meets my dad. And him and my dad had a conversation without me in the room. And I still to this day don't know the details of it. But then we get in the car to go to the show. And Joe's like, do you really want to do stand-up? And I go, yeah, man, I could. And I was one of those guys that would see other guys do it and go, if he could do it, I could do it.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah. How old were you?
I was 35.
35.
34 or 35.
Right.
And by the time I started doing stand-up, it was 06, so I was 35. And Joe says, you really want to do it? I go, yeah, man, I really do. He goes, well, then stop being such a pussy and do it.
Yeah.
He goes, I just talked to your dad. He goes, man, your dad. He goes, if you don't do this, your dad might never be able to see you do it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of went, oh, because he was pretty sick at the time.
Yeah.
So like a day or two later, I called my brother. I was like, we got to write jokes. I'm going to do stand-up. Because I went to the Ha Ha Cafe.
Yeah.
And BS'd my way into that club. Like, yeah. I still to this day have maybe done one open mic.
Right. Really?
Yeah, I've only done shows. So I walk into the haha like I'm the man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Joe told me who the owner's name was, and the night before I was hanging out with Joe Coy, John Lovitz, and Fraser Smith.
Yeah.
And if you remember, that was the trio. Fraser hosted, Lovitz, Joe would feature for John Lovitz.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I went there and told, I said, are you Jack? To the owner. He says, yeah. I go, hi, my name's Jason Collings. I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
I'd never done stand-up before in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, I go, my buddy Joe Coy sent me down here, said you'd give me some stage time. You know, I'm friends with Joe and John Lovitz, and I'm dropping their names.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Oh, really, Joe? How long have you been doing stand-up? I go, 5 years. I've never done it.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, come tomorrow. You're on the show.
Yeah. So I've seen so many guys do that there. Yeah. I've seen guys come in, headline all over the South. Man. And all of a sudden, they're on every Saturday.
Yeah. So I show up the next night. And then luckily for me, I actually did well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those guys that do what you were saying go. And then they're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, they're like, oh, next. And then you're out of there.
Yeah. And so I did well. They liked me. They asked me to come back the following night. And then it was just like a regular thing for me. And that's where I met Chris D'Elia. And then him and I started hanging out together and doing bars and pool halls and shit together. And it's just been doing it ever since. And the thing is, my second or third time doing stand-up, I was able to videotape the set and take it home to show my dad. Because he was too sick to leave the house, you know. And he saw the videotape, and he's like, man, this doesn't look like you've been doing this twice. This looks like you've been doing this for a while. He says, this is, son, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Don't stop doing this.
What, remember your first material when you went on at the Hall?
I talked a lot about just my home life, like being married to a Latin woman and that whole thing and kind of hacky stuff, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's your first time.
I think I remember saying stuff like, yeah, I like Latin women because I don't mind dating a chick with a kid. Like that kind of hacky stuff. And then I would talk about, I remember this one bit I used to talk about stretch marks.
Yeah.
And I would say, I like them. I don't call them stretch marks. I call them hieroglyphics. And I would do this whole thing about the stretch marks. And it was, that's the one note my dad had. He's like, yeah, don't do that joke anymore.
really?
He goes, I don't think your mom would like that joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I never did it anymore.
Does your mom come see you?
She does come to see me. It was cool because I remember I brought her. I got booked to headline a show at the Ice House on a Father's Day.
Yeah.
Because they wanted like that theme because I talk about my kids and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I got to bring my mom to the Ice House because if you remember, the Ice House used to be a music venue.
Yeah, yeah.
And guess who was in the house band at the Ice House?
Your dad?
My dad.
Really?
My dad was in the house band at the Ice House. So
wow.
I took my mom to see me, and it hasn't changed much.
No, not at all.
And she was just blown. She was, you know,
I love the Ice House.
And it was cool because she sits there and watches my show, and she goes, I haven't been here in 40 years.
Wow.
And the last
is your mom remarried?
Here, no. No, wow. She would never do that. I don't think
that's a weird thing, right? If your mom all of a sudden had a new dude.
I mean, if it made her happy, I'd be cool with it, but I just can't picture her doing it.
Yeah,
or me at like 44 talking to some guy, calling him dad.
Yeah.
Hey, dad.
Now, your brother, did he do the same thing as you? Like, okay, you're getting married and kids. I do too, because he's got.
His youngest is 18 and his oldest is 20.
Yeah.
Well, my youngest is 20. My oldest is 25.
So kind of the same.
But he was in a relationship for a long time with
this. Is he not married anymore?
No, he's a single guy.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies, my brother's single.
What?
Yeah.
But, so
David Collings.
Let's talk a little bit. You start doing comedy and you meet D'Elia and stuff. Does Joe Coy take you out? Who starts taking you out? Anybody?
Nobody, man. The first person to actually give me a road gig was Richard Villa.
Richard Villa
used to run that
refried
at the Ice House, but he would get headlining gigs around. And back a while, about 10 years ago, Jeff Garcia owned a comedy club in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Wow, he did?
Yeah, he owned a comedy club in Corpus Christi.
I didn't even know that.
And he flew me and Richard out to form, and that was my first time going out, but I didn't get much. And I still to this day don't get a lot of love as far as featuring.
Right.
Like the guys that I've featured for, Sebastian Maniscalco, for example, but it wasn't him asking me.
Right. It was the club booked me. Right.
And that happened.
But you went out with D'Elia. You did about a month on the theaters.
Yeah. D'Elia is. It's weird because him and I kind of started around the same time. He's only like 6 months ahead of me.
Yeah.
But he blew the fuck up, right? Which is awesome for me because then. He would bring me out. I mean, I've done, but before that, hardly any.
Yeah, I mean, D'Elia brought me on the road the first time. I mean, I learned a lot from that guy. You know what I mean? Oh, it's hilarious. Like, he was the first guy. I remember when I was at the store and I was asking Tommy, like, hey, man, I'm fucking 44. You know, what do I need to do to really get fucking focused in here and get on a fast path? Not a fast path, but don't fucking do the wrong things.
Right.
And he was like, go talk to that guy out there, Chris D'Elia. He'll tell you. And then I went out and talked to him. He's like, just be here every night. Every open mic there is.
That's
keep writing. Kill every time on the potluck.
Yeah.
He was giving me all these tips.
And that's the thing. When Chris went to the Comedy Store, we kind of split off. We were literally inseparable for a long time, me, Chris, and Brent Morin. And then Chris kind of branched off to the Comedy Store thing.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to the Laugh Factory because the Latino night started booking me a lot.
Yeah.
Because I talked about my Latino family kind of a thing. I think that's why. But and then I started getting booked at the Improv a lot. So we kind of split up. And Chris was like, you got to come to the store. And I was like,
yeah, it was weird because when I was hanging with Chris, I never even saw you.
Yeah, I'm happy at the Improv. I'm happy at it. But then I started realizing, wait a minute, the store is the place to fucking hone the skills.
It's the fucking best, man.
Yeah, so then I went there and once I was past there, I mean, I just like, that's still like, even if it's four fucking people in the OR.
Yeah, whatever.
I love it. You know?
I remember when you got your name painted on the wall. I filmed it for you.
I was in Montreal.
Yeah.
And you were down there. Yeah, you were sending it. You were
sending the pictures.
And then my brother went to the night.
We got on
party.
The wall the same time, right?
No, you were a year before me.
Oh, I was. Okay, yeah.
You were a year before. You got on before me year before.
Oh,
wait. Did we get on the same time?
Which part are you on?
I'm on the front.
I'm one.
Are you on the front of the
building? Yeah, we're the same time.
Oh, we're on the same time. Yeah.
I got passed before you, but for some reason they painted it like the next. Remember that?
Oh, okay. Like they was it a full year?
I don't know.
If it was a full year, then yeah.
But, yeah, it was some. Yeah, like I was at the beginning of the year. Yeah. You're at the end of the year, and then they painted them in July or
right. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
But I was in.
But I remember I was filming it because I went down there.
I was so stoked you were sending me that. And then my brother went the night of the party where they had a little, and brought my son.
Yeah.
And then they're taking pictures and sending me that. It was so cool.
Yeah, yeah. I remember your brother was there and people were going, congratulations, man.
Right. Yeah. So he gets that so much after shows. So people come up, hey, good set, man. Yeah. And he used to go, no, that wasn't me. That was my brother. And then people would look at him like,
what kind of an asshole are you?
You know?
Yeah.
So you know what he does now? Yeah. He says, thanks.
Yeah, you got to. You got to. I remember one time I was in front of the store and a guy came up with his wife and they said, you were incredible tonight, man. I said, oh, man, I didn't go on.
Right.
And they're like, no, we just saw you in there. You were incredible.
Who were they?
They thought I was Caparulo.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
So I'm looking at him and Chris is sitting there with me. I go, no, I'm telling you, I didn't go on. I'm sorry, but thank you. And he goes, hey, look. We're in town on vacation. You don't have to be a Hollywood fucker. You know, whatever. He got all fucking mad. Man. And I go, hey, fuck you, man. I didn't go on. You know, and I was just like, man.
People are nuts.
I go, what do you think? I just grew these tattoos out here on the patio?
Oh, yeah. Come on.
It is so weird, right?
Remember when Chris and I were at the Zanies in Nashville?
Yeah.
And this guy, people were coming up to us after the show and talking and taking pictures. And this guy, he's a little drunk. He's like, yo, you're fucking, thank you. He's being nice.
Yeah.
He's a little drunk. He's like, you're so fucking great, man. Thank, blah, blah, blah. And then another person comes up and says something to me. And I just for a second turned, I said, hold on a second to him.
Yeah.
And went, oh, thank you so much. He got so pissed.
Yeah, like you're dissing him.
Oh, you're too fucking good for me.
Oh.
How about this? Jason Colling sucks dick. Like he starts yelling that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh boy. And they usher him out. That night on Twitter, and he's posting.
Wow.
At Jason Collings is a piece of shit.
Wow.
And all I said was, hold on a second.
Yeah.
People lose it.
People get crazy out there, man. They really do. I always tell people, look, man, I'll take photos with you. Anything you want to do, don't fucking slap me on the back and don't touch my face.
Oh,
and it's not a germ thing or anything, but I had a woman come up. She grabbed my cheek and went, look how cute you are, some 45-year-old cougar.
People are
and she grabbed my face.
Imagine Brad Williams. I talked to Brad a lot about that kind of
thing. Oh, man.
People want to pick him up.
Yeah.
People want, oh, man, it's... People are nuts.
They are nuts when they get there. Like, I love doing comedy and I love people, but shitty people suck when they think you just work for them. I pay 20, you work for me. Do your jokes, boy, that kind of stuff.
Also, there's those like those people that don't have that. They're not aware. Like, they're not self-aware.
Yeah.
And they're not aware that what you're doing is extremely uncomfortable, and it's making me very
uncomfortable. Like, when a guy slaps your back, man, you were... funny up there. Like, who slaps a guy in the back? You don't know. I might have had back surgery. I always say that, too, about guys when I'm riding my bike. They'll come up and say racist shit because they think I'm a biker. You know, like, like they'll come up and just say, hey, man, watch out for the blah, blah, blahs around here, whatever. And you go, like, really, dude? You don't even fucking know who I am.
That's what I'm saying. They just don't.
Yeah.
They're not. Like, I've had so many people say... there was a story at the Comedy Store. Somebody was saying something about Mexicans.
Yeah.
And you know those Mexicans. Mexican this and Mexican. Not having any idea that my wife is Mexican.
Exactly what
and
I'm
my
talking
kids
about.
Are,
you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's unbelievable. I used to have a guy, I sold motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
And I called this other dealer up. You could do dealer swaps. Like if you're looking for a color for a guy. A guy go, oh, I want purple. And you go, I'd lie to him. I'd go, it's in the warehouse. But really, I'd just call another dealer. You know, you'd have to do that. You got to keep me. You don't go, it's over at another place. So I'd be like,
cuts you out.
it's in the warehouse. I'll have it here tomorrow. And they go, oh, cool. I remember one time I called the other guy and I said, hey, man, I got a guy over here. He's looking for that root beer brown, man. Can I get that? And he straight up just said crazy racist shit that I couldn't believe it. He's like, what is he, a blah, blah, blah? And I was like,
wow.
Really, dude? On the phone?
Yeah, it's just
that. You work at a dealer.
That's a perfect example. Their world is so small.
Oh, it's so fucking.
And they're not aware enough to know that there is a world past the tip of their nose.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable, man.
So funny. And they always think that they're the first ones to do it. Like, you ever have somebody come out after a show and talk about one of your bits and, like, try to do... I had this bit about shaking hands and closing it up. And without fail, every city
they try to do the same
they
thing.
They try to do the bit. Like I got a bit first about, guy that did it.
I got a bit about germaphobes, and right. I say, "What did somebody die from a handshake and we missed it? You know, everybody's mm-hmm. fist bumping. What happened to the handshake?"
And they come out.
So they come up and they go, they try to fist bump you.
But like they're the first ones to think of it.
Yeah, and I get into the elbow thing too. I go, people are elbowing, you know, and they do that, and I'm just like, yeah, right
We're
on.
We're doing this every night. Yeah. In front of a different 300, 400 people, and you think you're the originator of this cool. It's hilarious.
It is hilarious because you can tell, I just go, yeah, you got me, dog.
And you have to. You got to be nice.
You're not going to be a dick, but it's just that kind of stuff. Like, we're not, we could sound like dicks right now, like these fucking guys, but what you don't understand is that's the monotony of the road that starts to wear on you.
Right.
It's the guy doing your joke to you. It's the guy slapping your back. It's usually, the woman grabbing your face.
Yeah. And it's usually one person out of 100.
It's the dude. I had a shirt. It was $20. And I said, hey, shirts. And he said, how much? I said, 20. He's like, oh, 20. Look, what do you think you are? Seinfeld? I was like, oh, a $20 shirt. I'm signed. Are you out of your mind?
I don't know if Seinfeld's still selling t-shirts.
First of all, like $20 was a Seinfeld level. That guy's tickets are $500.
You know?
I love it.
Seinfeld?
Hilarious. Let's talk. You did the Tonight Show. That had to be a fucking crown in your...
I got to do
a jewel in your crown.
Yeah, I got to do it before Leno took off. Too.
Yeah.
It was cool, and it was a really cool experience. He was great.
And you did great on there.
I felt like it went pretty well, and they were happy.
I mean,
everybody that saw it said they were pretty happy with it. So
let's run that down. People don't know what happens, but did you turn in a set? Did they weed out shit?
My manager had a good relationship with the booker at the time, and he said, "Let's get you on the Tonight Show." And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "We're gonna get you tape," and I got to work it out at Comedy of Magic in Hermosa,
right?
Which is awesome because they tape all your sets. You don't have to bring your own equipment and everything.
Yeah.
And
pro shit.
Yeah. So I sent a tape in. They liked it. They had one note, which is usually I heard it's like a back and forth over and over.
One note. What was it?
They just didn't want me. I did a gay thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, we don't want to get letters on that. And it wasn't even it was more like just don't do it.
Yeah.
All the rest we like. So I changed that little bit. And next thing you know, I get a phone call. It's a three-way phone call with the booker, my manager, and myself. You're on the show. You're on our books. Congratulations. You're doing the show.
Yeah.
I'm like, awesome. Wow. That was emotional. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not anywhere what it used to be.
Show. I wanted to get into that, but let's talk like, this. Because people think.
Yeah. They used to be a career maker.
Yeah.
You do the Tonight Show. You are now at that. Yeah.
I mean.
But what it does do.
Yeah.
It felt, for me anyways, it felt that it legitimized me as a comedian.
Right.
Like in the comedy community, now it was a credit.
Yeah,
it was a good credit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and show. It wasn't,
you know, for bookings and stuff like that. Price tag went up a little bit, which was nice. I started getting some good headlining gigs. But anyways, they call me to tell me I'm going to do it, and then I don't hear anything for like 6 months.
Oh, the
and then,
worst.
And then the Fallon thing starts happening. Fallon's taking over. And I'm like, what the heck's going to happen? I call my manager. I go, is this thing going to happen? Or he goes, you know what? It might not happen. It's crazy over there right now with the whole Fallon change. He goes, we might have to start looking somewhere else. And I'm like, bummer. Because that was a great phone call to get.
Yeah, that's the worst. And then 6 months.
So I was like, all right. Yeah, no problem. And he goes, well, it's not a no yet, but it just doesn't look good.
Right.
My manager's thing, he says, he goes, I don't feel good about it. And I was like, all right. So one day I went for a run. I'm in a bad mood. I'm having one of those, you know, those days we have where we're like, my career sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm having that kind of
I was day. Having some weird shit last night myself. Yeah. And all of a sudden Bill Burr retweeted something of mine. I go, life's good.
Okay.
Yeah. I swear to God. It's like that.
It was
or Chelsea Peretti shit on me on Twitter for fun. And I'm like, yes, I exist.
It was one of those days where I'm like, what am I doing? And I walk into the house after my run. And my phone rings, and it's my manager, and I'm like, hey, he goes, you're doing the Tonight Show today.
Today?
Today.
Whoa.
I didn't know I was doing it till that day.
Oh, man.
He says, can you do it? I'm like, of course I can do it.
Somebody
you know,
fell out or
you
something?
You have to say, I'm available.
Yeah.
So should I tell them yes? I says, yes.
Yeah.
Tell them yes, of course. And he goes, okay, well, the car's picking you up in 45 minutes.
Oh, fuck.
What? I haven't shaved, so I look at my son. I go, dude, you want to go to the Tonight Show? He goes, who's on?
Yeah.
I said, you might know it's me, you know. But we get in the car, and we go out there, and it turns out Justin Timberlake was the other guest.
Right.
He was scheduled to perform a song at the end of the show, and he got sick, and his voice was bothering him.
Oh,
and
shit.
He had to do this big thing the next night, so he wanted to rest his voice. So they needed somebody to close the show.
Yeah.
And I got the call.
Wow. Did you meet Justin?
Oh, we were all there. One was on the couch. It was.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, when you're.
Oh, dude, it was awesome. He was really good.
Yeah.
After the show, we hung out. At one point, after the show, for like about a half an hour or so, it was just me, Justin Timberlake, my son, and Jay Leno in my dressing room just hanging out.
Wow. Did you start just going, I'm bringing sexy back?
What was cool, though, is that Justin, when I introduced him to my son, Justin called back a joke I did about him. He goes, oh, you must be. And he, you know what I think, or act like I'm making my son.
Oh, yeah.
He did that to my son. I'm like, oh, he listened. That's awesome. He, you know, he's a comedy fan, obviously.
That's
great.
He's
seen stuff on Saturday Night Live. But, yeah, man, it was an awesome experience. It was really cool. And then that whole year was like,
yeah,
Just for Laughs, The Tonight Show.
Oh, you did Just for Laughs?
I did Just for Laughs that year. Yeah. I got The Tonight Show that year, BET Comic View that year, and my name passed at the Comedy Store that year.
Just for Laughs, what show did you do?
I did Best of the Fest, Talk of the Fest, As Seen on TV, and like two more other ones that
that's
I can't remember.
That's dope.
Yeah,
I didn't even know you went there.
Yeah, I went 2 years ago.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, fuck, you got it going on. Yeah.
But that's pretty much what I got going on, just some road stuff. And, you know, I'm always in town at the Comedy Store and the Comedy Magic Club. But right now what I'm working on, and we're almost done, we should be done by the end of this week, is my brother and I are writing a pilot.
Oh, really?
Based on my stand-up with the kids being older and all that stuff. We're finishing up the pilot this week, and we're getting ready to
move
that thing around. So, yeah.
What? So I play the brother? I play your twin brother?
You could play. You know what we're going to do? Instead of writing them as twins, Irish twins. One older, one younger. So there you are. Yeah. Or you could be.
How many times do you pitch this to Chris and Brent? Like, you know, I'm the drug dealer in the bar. What are you doing, man? I hit him with that one all the time.
Oh, yeah.
How do you not have a drug dealer?
Why aren't I the fucking the married guy at the bar that's trying to stay away from, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, right. I'm the drug dealer. The old dealer. Old drug dealers are fucking. In comedy, right? There's old drug dealers.
I have not actually pitched myself to that. I'm there. I go to the tapings a lot. But I just feel like they got their formula.
Oh, yeah,
down,
and they know.
But you never know.
It's not like if you went, hey, man, you think I could get on? They'd go, you know, we never thought of that,
exactly.
Actually. We should have
What's
you
cool
on.
About that show is they are thinking about their friend.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
That's dope.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's hilarious how, like, you know. Oh, what is that? Oh, look at that. You know what that is? I keep all the old flyers.
Oh, look at Brent's picture on this one.
Look at that, dude. Look at that. That's an old flyer at my house.
It's you, Brent Morin, Amir Kay, and Chris D'Elia. Where?
It was down there in like on the beach far away at like this cool.
Look at the fucking credits.
Hold on.
The credits are hilarious because it's nothing.
Okay.
Like, look at Conan, Hulu Comedy Channel. Brent's credits.
Uh-huh.
That's so funny.
He was just working at Conan.
Yeah, Comedy Central presents Glory Days and Workaholics.
Glory.
So he didn't even have
No.
Dude, this is an old flyer. Is there a year on it?
Let me see. Here we go.
That's
so
hilarious.
The place was the Alley Restaurant. It was cool. It was down
at a restaurant.
Yeah, but it was they once.
Dude, that's cool that you keep all these.
Yeah, Amir was the guy that would put this on. It was really fucking cool. Newport Beach.
Oh, there you go. I've done that one.
Yeah, right. It's that looks like a Craftsman house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It looks like that place right there.
The best is Brent's headshot on here. I mean, 90210. Here we are. Oh man.
You know when I? You know why I keep these flyers? I look at these.
Good way. That's a good
well, thing. First of all, for a book, you know.
Yeah.
But also, it just memories. I mean, this night, I know it right now in my fucking head. Amir went on. He was kind of hosting. And then Brent went on. Then I went on. And Chris went on. And by the time Chris went on, the girls were really drunk and loud.
Oh,
it was one of those.
Chris's favorite audience.
Yeah. And he was just like, oh, man. But we had a fucking great time. And that kind of shit is what I love about comedy.
Yeah.
You know, like I know you from comedy. We see each other. We clown. We have fun. And, you know, we're older guys. but we're not, our material's not old.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
We're not, take my wife, please.
We're in the fucking world of Hollywood every day. Yeah. So I love that because you need guys, you need to be hanging out. That's why I love hanging out with like Maron or Burr or whatever, awesome. Because they're older guys and I could talk about, oh, remember that band or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Thanks for doing it.
Dude, that's awesome.
You got a Twitter, tell them it.
At Jason Collings, JasonCollings.
You got Instagram, same thing. You got a website?
Yes, Facebook.com.
Yeah, there you go, Jason Collings.
I'm working on a website right now, too, but it's not. There's
all right, man, and let's give a shout-out to your brother.
David Collings, he's the man, funniest dude I know.
Fuck yeah, you know why I like him? Because he gets me on Instagram. He's like, badass BMX bike. What are you gonna put shit up, you know?
David loves the old school, man.
Yeah, and he also comes up to me and goes, you're the funniest out of all of them. No, I'm kidding.
David, supposed to be me.
There we go. All right, thanks guys for tuning in.
Later.